Welcome to the Rennie Podcast, where we talk about the real estate market and the people connected by it. Our goal is to empower you to make informed decisions and provide context for the real estate world around you. We hope that with every episode, you will become a little more knowledgeable and a lot more curious.
Well, hello to everyone out there who is listening. I'm Ryan Berlin, Rennie's head economist and vice president of intelligence. And as always, I'm joined by Ryan Wise, Rennie's market intelligence manager and lead analyst within our intelligence division. Mr. Wise, we do not have a guest today.
That's right.
Why is that?
We're talking about the Rennie Landscape. So the Rennie Landscape, it's our signature publication. We release it twice a year in spring and in fall. And a lot of what we produce in intelligence at Rennie on a monthly basis are traditional market stats like sales, listings, price changes, things like that. But the Landscape really delves into the bigger macro factors that affect real estate. So our other reports kind of break down what's happening in our local markets in terms of the what. The Landscape is kind of all about the why. Why are these things happening and how are they affecting our local housing markets? And they help us understand where we are, what it means for housing and for real estate, and what that might mean for us going forward.
And we produce this report for a few different regions now.
Yes, very exciting. We do Vancouver, we do Victoria, we do Kelowna.
There we go. Okay, let's move on to the main part of this episode here. There's a couple of themes that we want to discuss, both of them rooted in the fall edition of the Rennie Landscape. And the first is that inflation has been conquered, but it's been conquered at the expense of the economy. And I'm kind of upset to hear about this because, you know, probably for the last 2 years, there's been a good chunk of every presentation I've given that's been on inflation, but you're telling me that soon I won't be able to devote as much time to inflation. I'm going to have to come up with new material.
Yes, high inflation is over. It's, and to your point about your presentations, inflation has really been the overarching thing for a few years now. The Bank of Canada's response to high inflation, which is to raise its policy rate and to engage in quantitative tightening, that's been the single most influential thing in real estate for the past 2 years. It's been the big thing that we've been discussing. We've spent so much time parsing the inflation data, trying to figure out how it's evolving, how much higher rates had to go, when were they going to start coming down, was the restrictive monetary policy doing a sufficient job in reducing demand in order to bring down upward pressure on prices. And so the good news for everyone, except maybe you and your presentations, is that we don't need to worry about high inflation anymore, especially for Canadian consumers. You know, stable price changes are here, and that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. So prices are higher and essentially permanently higher.
Yeah, that's the bad thing.
Is that the only bad thing?
I mean, there's other
stuff. No, there's other stuff. Yeah. Okay. So that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, prices aren't coming down. Prices overall aren't coming down. Maybe a few items here and there. Mm-hmm. But from now on, we can expect stable, predictable price growth, which is what the Bank of Canada wants.
Yes, that's what they want. And it's interesting because I don't think that we are, you know, the general public is going to derive a ton of sort of direct satisfaction from inflation slowing because we don't see inflation, we see prices. Mm-hmm. And because prices are going to remain where they are for virtually all of us, as expensive as the world feels right now, it's going to be no cheaper going forward.
Yes.
So that's a bit of a Debbie Downer. But the reality is inflation slowing kind of opens up our economy to returning to more stable activity and specifically within our housing market as well. We expect to see a very positive response. Is there other bad news, Ryan?
Yes.
Wise?
Unfortunately, there is. As much as sort of the inflation story is what we would say good news, the bad news is in order to slow inflation, we've slowed down the economy significantly. We're really seeing that in the labor market. So if we look at a series of labor market metrics, the unemployment rate has been rising for more than 2 years. Labor force participation, we talked about this last time, is at a 25-year low. Mm-hmm. So that's not great. Job vacancies have been declining. EI claimants have been rising. You know, when we look across the spectrum of labor market indicators, they all kind of point to the same thing, which is a weak labor market. That's really tough for everyday Canadians, especially against the backdrop of these higher prices.
For sure. And I think we know that businesses are not hiring like they used to. There's certainly more competition for work especially amongst the younger population. Mm-hmm. So there are some challenges that have been introduced by a slowing economy. And we can sound crass, I think, sometimes talking about the data the way we do, because it's aggregate, it's at a high level, and it kind of glosses over the day-to-day experience of businesses and households and individuals. So certainly as the labor market has weakened with an unemployment rate right now of, I believe it's 6.6%.
Yes.
And at its low, it was at, I believe, 4.9% about a year and a half ago. Like, that's a pretty big deterioration, and it's happened consistently. It hasn't happened overnight. We've kind of just seen the labor market devolve to this point. And that means that you have some people that have lost their job. You have others who want to work and haven't been able to find work. And that is because, to a large extent, there is this vice grip on the economy vis-a-vis high interest rates.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned all of that, but that doesn't even account for those people who've chosen no longer to participate in the labor force. So the discouraged workers out there who wanted to find work were unable to and are no longer being counted in that unemployment rate calculation.
Absolutely. So with all this talk about a deteriorating economy broadly, I have been asked by numerous people within the real estate industry, while I'm sort of speaking to some of these metrics, because it does not sound like a good news story, mm-hmm. the question often is some form of, should I be worried about the economy? And my answer generally, though, is no, you shouldn't be worried, but the Bank of Canada should be worried enough to lower rates. And so that is kind of like I don't know if that sounds too cute for some people, but I think the economy isn't in dire straits. Mm-hmm. It has evolved predictably against that backdrop of tightening monetary policy. And so now the Bank of Canada, because there's been that sort of negative feedback to higher rates, is going to look to unwind, as you've said, their existing monetary policy.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out that rates are still high, that we've only had a few cuts, a few declines in the mm-hmm. Bank of Canada policy rate, and it takes time for those rates to work their way through the economy. We talk so much when the bank was increasing its rate, how long it would take for those effects to materialize through the economy. And now we're facing the same thing. The labor market is still mm-hmm. getting weaker even as rates come down, because this stuff takes time. And that's one of the reasons why we need to see more consistent rate cuts and ultimately a lower, more neutral policy rate.
Indeed, yeah. I think the situation as it relates to interest rates feels a lot better right now because they have come down, whether you're looking at the Bank of Canada's policy rate or the prime rate or variable rates on mortgages or even fixed rate mortgages. Those all come down. So it's like, oh, okay, this is, we're moving in the right direction. This feels better. But technically speaking, interest rates are still restrictive where mm-hmm. they sit. So they're not neutral, as you touched on that word, that neutral rate where the Bank of Canada's policy interest rate is neither expansionary or restrictive, which they deem to be between 2.25 and 3.25%. We are not there. At 4.25, we're still full 100 basis points outside of that. And we're talking a lot about rates here, and that kind of leads us into our second theme. We've already started down this road, but just mm-hmm. to give it some structure here, you do see interest rates continuing to fall. And with that, you see some lost affordability, if you will, being restored to the housing market here in Metro Vancouver.
Yes, and I think both of those are coming, or we've already actually started on that path. But like everything we just talked about, I think what we're saying is we need lower interest rates. And when I say we, I don't just mean like those of us on the West Coast who are working or participating in local real estate. We as Canada need lower rates, get the economy going again. So to your question, like, where do we go? I think our expectation with two Bank of Canada announcements coming between now and the end of the year, they're both for sure going to be cuts. The only question is whether they're the sort of smaller 25 basis point cuts or whether there's room for 50. And I think as of everything mm-hmm. I've seen so far, I'm still leaning towards 25 basis point cuts. However, there are two very important data releases between when we record this podcast and the next policy announcement on October 23rd. If we see more unwinding of the labor market with the September jobs data, or if we see a further decline mm-hmm. in headline inflation below that 2% with September inflation data, then that might change. But I think based on everything we know right now, I still think two small cuts between now and the end of the year.
I agree with you. You know, in the US, the markets were betting that they were going to see another 50 basis point cut at their October meeting. But then the jobs report just came in for September just last week, and it was really, really strong. And immediately all those bets got cut back to a 25 basis point cut. And I saw one analyst was saying, you know, there's some justification here for a rate hike, which actually I do not agree with.
Yeah.
But the point being that each of these data points and these data releases just sort of dramatically changes the perspective on what the outlook is in the short run. I think there's a lot of changing of positions and disagreement, let's say, about the short-term cadence of rate changes. But where do you see the Bank of Canada's policy rate sort of settling in sometime next year?
Yeah, so we're saying 2.5% policy rate, which would be on the lower end of their neutral rate range. Mm-hmm. And possibly before the end of next year, but certainly by the end of next year, as the economy continues to sort of slow and if we continue to see sort of further weakening the labor market, we might need to see that the pace of those cuts speed up. But ultimately, I think sort of a 2.5% policy rate in mid to late 2025 is a reasonable expectation.
Yeah, I mean, that feels right from where we're sitting right now. I know that would have seemed very aggressive
a few months ago.
yeah. But now, like, you just have this pendulum swinging the other way, mm-hmm. where a couple of the big Canadian banks believe that we're going to settle in at 2% mm-hmm. Sometime next year. So that implies faster cuts and deeper cuts than even we expect to see.
Yeah, and it's worth noting whether it's 2, 2.25, 2.5, even up to 3, wherever we settle, I think most of the consensus is around finishing at a higher rate than where we were pre-pandemic. So heading into the pandemic, the policy rate was 1.75% in Canada.
Yeah.
And I think most of the consensus is that some of the structural changes that we've seen over the last 5 years leads to a neutral rate that's a little bit higher than where we were kind of heading into the pandemic.
Okay, so bottom line through all of this is that rates are coming down. They've already started. Mm-hmm. They will continue. I believe I was quoted as giving a guarantee that rates would continue coming down in the last episode.
I'm going to hold you to it.
I feel good about it.
Yeah.
So rates are going to come down, but not to their pre-pandemic immediate pre-pandemic precedent.
Yeah.
But as a part of that, or along with that, we do expect that housing market activity is going to pick up largely because of that.
Yes.
We've had continued population growth. We have a lot of pent-up demand. We know that people have kind of been locked in a little bit to a certain extent, whether it's into rental or they just haven't been able to move up market because in ownership, because rates have been so high. But if housing market activity picks up, that basically means that the landscape of real estate for buyers is going to become more competitive, and that often leads to higher prices. So it's sort of like, you know, where is all this going to settle in the end with lower rates and maybe higher prices? Where do you see, or how do you see, I guess, affordability being impacted as the next 12 months evolves?
Yeah, I think it's a good question because, you know, conventional wisdom says that with declining rates, increased activity, that will lead to higher prices, and some of that will be offset. We saw a real sort of extreme example of that in 2020 and 2021 when rates went to near zero. The housing market completely took off and prices skyrocketed. But what we see, certainly in the short term, there's so much inventory on the market today that there's a lot of room to absorb some of that increased demand and some of those increasing sales counts, mm-hmm. if you will. And so we don't expect necessarily a lot of increase in prices alongside some pretty substantial decreases in rates. So if we just kind of take a step back from, say, May 2022 when prices peaked to April of this year, mm-hmm. with the, if you look at, say, variable rates with the 4.75 percentage point increase in variable rates, in order to offset that decrease in affordability, you would have needed to see a 42% decrease in values, right, to even it out, which obviously prices did not fall. Values, whichever method you use, values did not fall 42% over 2 years.
Well, and as a point of reference, so in Metro Vancouver, they fell, depending on home type, somewhere between 9% and 15%.
And to April, there was some recovery in the early part of this year. If you use condo prices, which I think is useful because it's sort of the natural entry point, mm-hmm. for first-time buyer, they're most interest rate sensitive. Condo values were only down 1.2% from May 22 to April of 24.
Right. Yeah.
Because so much they dropped further, but then they recovered. But since then, they've dropped a further 2%, and we've had 3 interest rate cuts. So already in the last 4 or 5 months, we've seen actually a return of some of that affordability. And now we're, you know, if you say you pick the midpoint of the Bank of Canada's neutral rate range, if we drop to 2.75 and we accompany it with anything less than 20% increases in a 20% increase in values, homebuyers will regain more of their purchasing power than they have today. And certainly we don't expect to see 20% increase in values between now and the end of next year, much, much less than that. And again, I don't really see a lot of increase in values at all over the next few months.
I mean, the feeling is going to be that housing is still expensive. This is not to insinuate that, hey, just, you know, wait 6 months or 12 months and, it's going to be bargain basement deals out there.
This is like the price of eggs all over again. Eggs are still expensive.
A lot of what you sort of the scenario and the evolution of the market that you described, say over the next year or so, pertains largely to buyers or new buyers. Mm-hmm. But what about people who already own a home?
Yeah. So I think we've been following a lot about renewers as they're, you know, renewing their mortgages at higher rates. How are people doing also with increased costs? Obviously, that whole inflation discussion, people's household budgets have been squeezed. So if we look at a few metrics, kind of check in on how homeowners are doing, we can look at debt service ratios in Canada. Very riveting, I know. The mortgage debt service ratio, which is the share of income that Canadians are, as a whole, are dedicating to servicing their mortgage debt, is at the highest it's ever been as of the second quarter of this year. So mortgage DSRs have been increasing to their highest level ever. So not a great thing.
Makes sense.
Canadians are spending more of their incomes than they ever have before on their mortgages. Yeah, and it makes sense, absolutely. The sort of silver lining here is that the total debt service ratio hasn't really increased much over the last 2 years and is kind of in line with 2019 levels.
So, Ryan, what is the total debt service ratio? It's
the share of income that you're spending to service all of your debts.
So mortgage and non-mortgage.
Car loan, student loan, line of credit, everything else, all of it combined into one. And so that total is kind of around 2019 levels. It's only increased a little bit. And the reason is early in the pandemic, borrowers paid down a lot of their non-mortgage debt. And so the non-mortgage part of DSRs is actually down quite a bit over the last few years. Some may have consolidated it into their home, things like that. But the home equity line of credit actually shows up in non-mortgage debt as well. So it's not just HELOCs and things like that. Mm-hmm. So overall, Canadians are doing okay in terms of how much of their income they're spending on debts, even though they're spending so much of their income servicing mortgage debts. The other thing we can check is the mortgage arrears rate. That's the share of Canadians who are 90 days or more behind on their mortgage payments. Mm-hmm. So this one kind of lags a bit because you have to wait 3 months to see if someone's in arrears. And it's been increasing of late. And there were some scary headlines a couple months back about it. But the current rate in Canada, 0.19%.
So that is 19 out of 10,000?
Yes. In BC, it's even lower at 0.16%. These are tiny numbers, but I think some context here is helpful. Sort of the 10 years leading up to the pandemic, the average in Canada was 0.29%.
So about a lot of percents here, about 50% more than the current arrears rate.
Exactly. So even though the number has increased a bit of late, we're still falling behind on our mortgage payments as a country and as a province, less than we did before the pandemic when rates were much lower. So overall, it's sort of a, I would say, a good news piece of data here.
And yeah, and what it says is that despite rising interest rates, but also just rising prices, that has squeezed everybody. No one's immune to that. But despite that, we've managed to weather the storm to date for the most part.
And
for the most part,
people are paying their bills. We've also seen in other areas like retail spending and things, they're probably spending less elsewhere. So people are making the decision to go to restaurants less, spend less at the store and focus on paying their bills.
Well, and they are, because that feeds back into the indicators we're seeing for the economy and for the labor market.
Absolutely.
So that indeed is happening. And as we look ahead, you know, there's this issue of mortgage renewals.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about this mortgage renewal cliff. Some of you may have heard of that.
So it's worth noting that we haven't had any 5-year fixed rate renewers yet who originated during the pandemic
exactly.
at near zero rates. So we are 5 years today from fall 2019. So what's coming is a wave of renewers of people who either bought or refinanced in 2020 and 2021 at very, very low interest rates, who will undoubtedly be renewing at much higher rates. So Ryan Berlin, I know you were just kind of looking at this. What did you find as you put together some projections on sort of where people are going?
In order to speak to the issue of mortgages renewing and what that situation looks like, it does require us to forecast what mortgage rates may look like. And so from where we are now, whether you sort of pick your rate, could be rates for insured mortgages or uninsured mortgages. The bottom line is, whatever you choose, we do see mortgage rates settling in essentially to where they are now. There might be a little bit of upward movement and downward movement, but over the next 12 months, like through the end of, 2025, that they're going to end up in the same ballpark as they are today. At the same time, homeowners who were able to capitalize on those low interest rates 5 years ago, to your point, those were the pandemic renewers. Mm-hmm. Some of them were getting 5-year fixed rates as low as 1.39%. So that's amazing for 5 years. And it's really, really painful after that. And so, yes, we haven't gotten to that point where that pain is being fully felt. But by the end of next year, by the end of 2025, you are going to have a big swath of homeowners in Canada who are renewing from 1.39% or thereabouts to something around 4%. So that is a significant increase in monthly interest costs that will increase payments dramatically for many households. The question is, we've brought this up before, is how does the stress test impact that situation? Because when you originate a new mortgage, you are tested. Basically, can you afford, the question that is asked is, can you afford, based on your income, an interest rate that is essentially 2 percentage points higher than what is on your contract? But we'll be at the point at the end of next year where that stress test rate was being applied to such a low, or the stress test itself was being applied to such a low mortgage rate, that even with the stress test, the renewal rates are going to exceed that level.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because that'll be the first time we've been in this situation. A lot of people who have been renewing at much higher rates, but to date, they've all been renewing at around or less than what they were previously stress tested to.
Right, which in a nutshell says that, 5 years ago, it was deemed that households could afford the rates that they're experiencing now. Mm-hmm. But what we're going to see soon is a situation where 5 years ago, people weren't tested to the rates we're about to see. Doesn't mean that there's going to be any kind of demonstrable change to the dynamics of the housing market, because over 5 years, most households have paid down their outstanding balance. Incomes have gone up. And so the ability to pay has increased. But that's definitely something we're going to have to keep an eye on, because it is the sort of one outlier in all of the changes that our economy has sort of gone through and housing market over the past few years that has yet to fully land.
And there's been one recent policy announcement that I think is directly aimed at this, which is the OSFI, the Office of the Superintendent of Financial Institutions, which now allows for renewers who change financial institutions to not be stress tested upon renewal, which should lead in theory to more renewers shopping around their mortgage at different lenders and potentially having more competition for renewers. And that could in theory have downward pressure on renewal rates for those borrowers.
Yeah, I think that is unambiguously good news for homeowners. Let's move on to our next segment, which is Beneath the Headline. The headline is Canadian temporary resident growth falls 48%. So I think this needs some context.
Yes.
And go for it.
I may have cherry-picked a headline that relates directly to one of the elements in the rental landscape, but this is very topical because we just got some quarterly demographic statistics from StatsCan, which give us a nice mid-year check-in on how population growth has evolved in 2024. And yes, temporary resident growth did fall in the second quarter and through the first 6 months of 2024. But again, it's against the backdrop of an incredible record-setting year in 2023. So overall population growth through 6 months was still more than 500,000 people, second most first six-month period of all time in this country. And we added more people in the first 6 months than 47 of the last 52 years.
Full years.
Yes.
Yeah,
to add 500,000 people in a full year is almost unheard of in Canada. When we did it in 6 months, but yes, it was less than the first 6 months of last year. The other thing I would note, we have temporary permit data through July and through the first 7 months of this year. More permits were issued to temporary residents than the first 7 months of last year when the record was set. The reason that overall temporary resident flows were down was because a few more people left. So we issued more permits, more people came in, but also more people left. And so overall, what we've seen is barely a slowdown in the rate of growth for non-permanent residents and temporary residents. And if we take a step back and we talk about some of the new policy announcements regarding non-permanent residents from the federal government, they actually want to reduce the share of non-permanent residents in Canada. When they announced the policy in March, it was like 6.2% of the population, I believe. With this new data release, we're up to 7.3% of the population, and they actually want to reduce it to 5%. So we're still going in the wrong direction per this new policy announcement. So 7 out of 100 Canadians are non-permanent residents, and they want to get it to 5%.
But because we've seen the non-permanent resident population grow over the past 6 months and the time since they made the announcement, they've left themselves, based on the original timeline they laid out,
2027.
Less time to hit their target, and they have deeper cuts to make.
Exactly. And so again, through 7 months of this year, they have not slowed down on the issuance of new permits, which is probably one of the biggest pieces to this. Obviously, another one is how many people leave when their permits expire. And you can also do some things around converting temporary residents to permanent residents and things like that. But ultimately, issuing fewer permits will be key to sort of implementing this policy. So we'll see when we get the August data, that's when all the students show up for September school. So we'll know a bit more when that comes. We know there's specific targets around international students. But again, to date, we really haven't seen much of a slowdown. You know, the second most of all time is hardly much of a slowdown at all.
So beware the statement that says that growth has slowed, because it's still growth.
Yes.
That's still what we're seeing here.
The second most.
Okay, for all of our listeners, if you'd like to learn more or read more about the topics we discussed today, you can find all of this and more in the fall 2024 edition of the Rennie Landscape, which is on our website at rennie.com. And in addition to that, we're always game to answer your real estate questions. You can either email us directly at intel@rennie.com or leave a voicemail via the link in the podcast description. All right, that's it from us. Ryan Wise, thanks again for doing this.
Always a pleasure.
All right, we'll see you next time.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us on the Rennie Podcast. If you'd like to learn more, all resources mentioned in the episode can be found at rennie.com/intelligence. To be the first to receive this information, register for intelligence updates.